It's always good when it's a three hug night. So now, introduce our speaker, K.L. from Malibu.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kay. Wow, this meeting has grown considerably since the last time I was here. I'm going to be, I have to pee so badly. If I move around a little bit, you know why. But I didn't want to be late, you know, after the break. And also driving here, I just have to say this out loud. I hate people who tailgate, and driving here, someone was tailgating me, and I just became, you know, obsessed with making this guy's life miserable behind me. And now we'll talk about the serenity I found in Al-Anon. But before I get there, I want to thank Jack for asking me to be here tonight. I've known Jack for like 40 years now or something. I mean, I was newborn when we met. And we've had this parallel journey in Al-Anon together, which has really, really been wonderful. I want to say happy birthday. Well, I love, love, love birthday nights. They're always so joyous and grateful, and it's always a pleasure. So happy birthday to all the birthday people. I also want to welcome the newcomers and tell you, if someone's drinking or sobriety is bothering you, you know, this is the right place. I am going to share a little bit, you know, about why I actually need to be here. And for the newcomers, if you can't identify with my particular story, please don't judge Al-Anon based strictly on me. You know, we don't use last names here. We don't talk about, or at least at my home meeting, we don't talk about our jobs. We talk about only one thing with each other, and that's the one thing that we have in common, and that's that our lives have been affected by someone else's drinking or using. So if you don't hear your story and my story, you know, trust me, stick around. You will hear it from somebody at some point in time. I ran into, I just want to, there's a couple of women here from my home meeting that I've been going to for many, many years, and it was a surprise and a happy surprise. I don't know where they're sitting now. They were standing over there. I don't know where they went, but I'm glad they're here tonight, and I feel bad because one of them has probably heard everything I'm about to tell you tonight, so if she's sitting next to you and dozes off, that's why. I always start the same way. My original sponsor in Al-Anon, Marjorie, always started by saying, I'm here because I love an alcoholic. And I have to start by saying, I wish it was only one. I love alcoholics and drug addicts, and the good news for me is they also loved me. But what I've learned in attending Al-Anon meetings and working this program is that I'm actually a member of Al-Anon because I work the 12 steps of Al-Anon. I believe that Al-Anon is a 12-step program. It is not a group therapy session. You know, I have lots of people. I can talk about a lot of things, but what's made my life better is working these steps. And I'm a huge advocate of the steps. And I had a sponsor, Marjorie, for the first 18 years that I was in Al-Anon, and she unfortunately passed away. I'll talk about that in a minute. And someone said to me, I said, God, I've got to find a new sponsor. It's going to be very difficult. And she said, why do you need a sponsor? You've been around for a long time. And I thought, God, left to my own devices, I would go right back to where I was before I came, the first time I came into these rooms. There are two very different women that I picked to sponsor me, and I believe it's because I'm in two very different places, you know, which is a tribute to Al-Anon. For the newcomers, you'll hear people share about their qualifiers. For me, this is me personally. Everything I say here is just my personal opinion. I refer to myself as my qualifier in this program. And the reason that I do that is I would love to blame someone else for my bad behavior. And I did for decades. But the reality is, when there was no longer active alcoholism or drug addiction in my life, I still was behaving very badly. So it was never, ever about what someone else was doing or not doing. It was always only about how I was reacting to it. And in Al-Anon, I learned a different way to react other than tonight with the guy tailgating me, because I did tap my brakes a couple of times just to get him off my ass, you know? I also believe that alcoholism is a self-diagnosed disease. I have tried to convince people that they have it. and I can be pretty convincing. And what I've learned is until someone acknowledges that on their own, there's really nothing I can do or say that's going to get them, you know, to that place. And it's not up to me anyway to identify someone as an alcoholic. It's up to them. The first person that drank in my life was my father. I can share about my father today. I didn't talk about him for many, many years, even in the beginning of my time in Al-Anon, because I still have that kind of trying to protect him. I didn't want people to think ill of him. I didn't, even though he had long since passed away and none of you knew him, I still felt that I had to honor him in a certain way. And that way was by keeping his secret, you know. And he did not consider himself an alcoholic because he didn't drink until the sun went down. I always joke, I was speaking once somewhere on daylight savings, and I realized that was my father's least favorite day of the year, you know, that extra hour of daylight. And you know, he would just white knuckle it, you know, until the sun went. Oh, except there was one time where he was arrested for drug driving, like at noon. And what I remember about this, I share about this, you know, it was before ATMs and ready cash and all that stuff. And it was a Friday, and it was after the banks had closed, and it meant he had to stay in jail for the weekend. And I was so upset and so worried, and oh my God, what's going to happen to him? Is he going to be okay? He's going to be sad. He'll be upset. He'll be angry. And my mother was la 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 la, you know, for the weekend. Not a care in the world. I developed my Al-Anon isms very young. You know, there's five personalities I've been told that Al-Anons take on, and I'm an only child, and I was very busy. I took on all five of those personalities. And my father never did find sobriety. He, you know what I learned, actually, and I attend open AA meetings, and I read AA literature. I listen to AA speaker tapes as well, and I learned so much from the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful that they're willing to share their recovery with me, because it really helps with my recovery. It leads me to a place of compassion that I did not have before I came here. My father never thought he was an alcoholic, but when he drank, his personality changed. And he was a kind and loving man, and if you met him on the street, you would know he was a kind and loving man. But he suffered from a horrible disease that caused him, when he consumed alcohol, to behave badly, to me specifically, and my mother. And he would get violent, and it was bad. And there was one night where he had been drinking, and I'm a dog person, and so was he, so was my mom, and I had given the dog a little piece of meat from the, oh, and we never ate together in my house. My mother ate on the cutting board in the kitchen, I ate in my bedroom, and my father ate at the coffee table. And when I see on television people sitting around, or I go to other people's houses, I always thought they were doing it because I was there, because they had company, you know. And because the nights I wasn't there, they would all be in their separate places also, you know. And I gave the dog a little piece of meat, and he had been drinking, got very upset, and he went in the kitchen, he grabbed a knife, and he came after me, and my mom started screaming, get out of the house, get out of the house. And I ran next door, and I pounded on the door, and again, everyone loved my dad, you know. No, my dad's drinking really took place within the home, and the bad behavior only within the home, basically. I was panicked because I thought he was going to kill my mother. And I said to the neighbors when they opened the door, my dad's drunk, he's got a knife, I'm afraid he's going to kill my mother. And the look on their face was of complete disbelief, because this isn't the man that they knew. But they believed me, because why would I be standing there, you know, weeping in the state that I was in? And they called the police, and the police came, and my dad knew them. And I remember as their taillights went down the street, I thought, now what? Because I thought they were going to come, and they were going to solve this problem in my home. They were going to help me out and help my mom out. And I was sitting in the ivy in front of our house, and when they drove away, I thought, oh my God, now what? And I had to walk, and I was raised in Van Nuys, and as I walked up the driveway, which isn't any longer than this building, it seemed like it was 6 miles long, and I was petrified to go in the house. And he didn't say anything, and my mom didn't say anything, and no one ever said anything about that night again, ever. I didn't talk about it till I'd been in Al-Anon for about 5 years, and I was telling a friend of mine, and it's the first time I'd ever shared it with anyone, and she was in AA, and she said, you should tell your sponsor, you know. And I was afraid, because I still kind of had that, you know, in understanding ourselves, I thought that I was causing this. I thought that every time he would lose his temper with me, it was because I had done something wrong. I didn't ever put it together that his behavior was in direct relationship to the amount of alcohol he was consuming. And I unfortunately did not make my amends, because I did not come into Al-Anon before my father passed away. But I was able to make an amends to him. And for those of you who may have someone in your life who is no longer around, you can still make your amends to that person. And just for me, I looked up the difference between an apology and an amends when it came time for me to do this step. And an apology means to say you're sorry, at least in my dictionary, for having hurt someone's feelings. And amends means to mend the situation. And for me, oftentimes that means saying I'm sorry and then changing the behavior that I'm making the amends for. Al-Anon has, someone shared about this, about an empty toolbox. I felt the same way. I didn't have an empty toolbox. I had a toolbox, and I've said this a number of times, that was filled with a bunch of broken tools, because I learned a way to survive in a home where alcohol was very present, that served me well in that home. But when I went out into the world, none of those things worked, and my visual of it is pounding a square peg into a round hole. And instead of moving the square peg into the round hole, I would just get a bigger mallet. And it didn't work, but I kept doing the same thing because I didn't know what else to do until I came into these rooms. I share about, so I started, after that, I started collecting alcoholics and drug addicts. And I always say this, you know, people collect things, you know, I don't know what you make, I can't even say spoons from around the world or, you know, whatever. People collect unicorns, you know, and I collected drug addicts and alcoholics, and you know, I'm going to be 61 soon, and I was, as I said, raised in Van Nuys, and there were a lot of drug addicts and alcoholics in that area, and I was never out of them, I can tell you that. Never ran out of them. And I was happy. You know, I took great pride in being the one that was always the driving, the girl who drove. I was the one who worked. You know, I was the a box girl and snack bar girl at Vaughn's. And I had an income, albeit $1.60 an hour. I had it. And I was the one who drove. And when kids would say, you know, we're going to a concert, well, how are you getting there? And they'd say, well, Kay's driving. The parents would say, okay. And that gave me a great sense of pride, you know. And I kept thinking I couldn't fix the problem in my dad. I couldn't make him happy. So I kept looking for drug addicts and alcoholics that I could fix. Because in my mind, and my father did contribute to this, I believed that the God of my understanding at that time was a punishing God, and I thought he didn't like me because I wasn't a good daughter. I wasn't a nice daughter. Because my dad's drinking brought out the worst in me. I didn't just cower in a corner. I mean, I was bad. I was mean. I said terrible things. I did terrible things to him because I knew the angrier he got and when he'd explode and smack me, the next day he'd come begging for my forgiveness. And the only power I had at that time was to not forgive him. And I don't know if any of you in this room have done that, but that is not a position of power. And I learned that here. So I went out in the world, you know, I'm in high school, everybody's doing drugs. And mind you, let me tell you, I did try. I wanted to be an alcoholic or a drug addict or both. I did want to be, and I did. I gave it a very good try. The problem is it just never worked for me. I hated, you know, I say this, I had a choice. I could either be high or I could keep my eye on you. I couldn't do both. And I, you know, because if you're high, everything's in a blur and you're passed out on the floor somewhere. But so I had to pick, and for me, I picked keeping my eye on you, which meant I had to be pretty much sober and clean, you know. So it also just never took away the pain from me. It always made my pain worse, always made me feel worse. So, you know, it didn't, I never really went very far down that road. So my best friend did, however. Drugs and alcohol worked really well for her, and she was a mess. She finally moved on to heroin. Long story, she became a heroin addict. I did everything I could to help her out. On New Year's Day, which would have been yesterday, Happy New Year, by the way, she called and begged me to help her kick heroin. And I, you know, in our readings, it talks about some of us are arrogant, smug, self-righteous, and dominant. I was so arrogant that I believed that I could, as a non-addict, that I could help someone else kick a heroin habit. And I said, yeah, I think I can help you with that. You know, and I was so earnest. I don't, again, some of you Al-Anons, I don't know about you, but I was so earnest in everything I said, you know, yeah. I think I can handle that. I can take care of that for you. You just got to do what I say is all. You know? So I told her there were three rules for her to come to my house. And I was the only one who had a house, you know, with furniture. I mean, some may have had homes, but no furniture. I had beds, you know, not futons. I had, you know, kitchen things, glasses, you know. You could get a glass at the Shell station when you'd fill the tank. I had 88 of those glasses because I had a lot of thirsty friends. So I said she could move in. There were three rules. Remember, this is practicing. This is the group participation part. This is a practicing heroin addict alcoholic. I said there are some rules. The first rule is no lying. She said, okay. My first sponsor used to say to me, whenever he'd tell me what I wanted to hear, I believed him. Well, she told me what I wanted to hear. I said, okay, second rule, no drugs or alcohol in the house. And she said, okay. I said, and the third rule is you come home every night. Because I got to keep my eye on you. You know, you can bring a lot of people home with you. I'll keep my eye on all of them. I said, but they all have to come here. I'm not going out to watch them. You have to bring them here. Besides, I'm the only one with a sofa and, you know, 88 glasses. So I brought them. She came to the house and, you know, within a couple of weeks, she disappeared, you know. And I was so angry. And I called where she was, and they said she was napping. I said, put her on the phone, and that arrogant, smug, self-righteous, and dominating part of me came out, and I started screaming at her, you know, get over here. How could you do this? Well, I'm not hot. You liar. You know, get over here. I'm throwing your stuff out in the street. You know, before I came to Al-Anon, I did not think I was very dramatic in my life. And I, by myself, physically took all of her furniture and threw it into the middle of the street. And the part I remember the most was moving her queen-size mattress by myself. Have you ever tried to do that? No, don't. Unless you're an untreated animal, because that's the only person who can, the box spring you can do, because it's, you know, got a frame, but the mattress wiggling all over. But it wasn't just that I was going to get it out of the house, it's that I was going to get it out of the house without it, and throw it, mind you, into the middle of the street. I was going to get it to the middle of the street without it touching the ground, because I didn't want it to get dirty. Because this is how my you know, and it's on my back, and I'm like scooting, you know. And she comes up screeching and begs me, don't do this to me, don't do this to me. And I said, no, you broke the rules. I am done with you. I am sick of you. I have had it with you. I am done with you. And that night, she killed herself. And I try to rush through this part because after all of these years, this still makes me incredibly sad. Because without health, this disease can end in insanity or death. And I think sometimes, I know I can't speak for you, get a little complacent with that idea because I'm around recovery all the time. But those who don't find recovery sometimes just don't make it. And I blame myself for her death. Her parents blame me. You know, why did I kick her out? And you know, why did I kick her out? You know, because she broke the rules. So what? I think today maybe God was protecting me from being the one to find her, you know. I think that's the night she was going to go, you know. That's the night she was going. And it just, I wasn't the one who had to find her. Unfortunately, your parents did. And I did what I've heard alcoholics do. I lived in Sherman Oaks at the time. I moved to Hollywood. And because I say this because there's no alcoholics or drug addicts in Hollywood. And within, you know, a couple of weeks, I had a house full of them again, and I was off and running. And another friend of mine, years have passed, and another friend of mine went into a drug-induced psychotic episode. His girlfriend came over. She came over to the house screeching up. I was cleaning out the garage, and she came up to me, and she said, Kay, I need you. Now, you hear the little trick. Don't you love that line? Really, I mean, be honest. When someone says, I need you, doesn't that just, it does, we know it. It just makes you feel good, you know? And she said, Kay, I need you. And again, in that earnest way, I went, how can I help you? She said, well, so-and-so's flipping out. And I said, I can handle this, you know? I got in the car, I drove over, I could not handle this. His dog was shaking in the IV. It scared me to death, you know, this dog. And I... Alla dog. I put the dog in the car and took care of the dog. Finally got the guy checked into the hospital and cleaned up his apartment because I didn't want him to see the mess when he came home. He caused a lot of damage to broke a water, you know. And I went and tidied up. And then I drove to the hospital and yelled at him for having done it. But at the same time, a friend of mine called me and said, my husband's drinking is bothering me. And I said, you know, there is this place called Al-Anon. I think you need to go to a meeting. So when I was hearing birthday people come up here tonight talking about how they came in here on their knees, I came in here on my high horse because I didn't come in here for me. I came here, I am so Al-Anon, my first Al-Anon meeting, and my second one, I might add, was because I thought someone else should be in these rooms. And I was obsessed with this. Well, the first time I went was 3 years before it actually took, and I took someone else whose girlfriend was in rehab in the hospital, you know, next door. And the woman leading the meeting had 10 years. And I passed all kinds of judgment on that because I thought, 10 years? What is taking her so long? You know, I mean, she was bragging about it, and she, you know, everyone around was like, ooh, I thought, why have they picked her to be their spokesperson? You know, this is embarrassing for her, I would think, you know. So I didn't hear a word that anybody said that night. 3 years later, this woman calls, I say, look, so-and-so is in, you know, 5-point restraints at county. I've got to go to the hospital. I've got to call this therapist, yell at her, figure what has she been doing the last 9 years? How come she didn't prevent this? I've got to do some more cleaning up. I've got to make sure. And there were two little fish, there was a betta fish when I was cleaning up his apartment that wiggled under my fingers. And it was flopping on the floor because he'd knocked the thing over. And I grabbed the fish and I took it to a fish store. And very seriously, I said, you know, here's this fish has had a very traumatic you know? And I know it's a betta fish. They're a fighting fish. finished, but look, it's listless, it's unhappy, I don't think it's going to survive the night, you know, what can I do? The guy gave me drops, I took the fish home. I couldn't save my father, I couldn't save Robin, I couldn't save this guy, I couldn't save the many, I'm not even giving you the list, the complete list of the people who unfortunately had taken their lives, you know, either in a car or a needle in their arm or overdose of some kind. But I was going to save this fish. If it was the last thing I did, because in the eyes of God, I had to do something right. You know? So I gave the fish the drops. I put it on my windowsill. I took care of this fish, and I saved that fish's life. So that made me happy. Unfortunately, fish have a short lifespan. So it wasn't a, you know, a long-term success for me. But under my watch, at least, he stayed alive. So I took this woman to the meeting, and she's sitting next to me. And the whole meeting, I'm not listening. And they had greeters who I hated. Just let me, you know, they wanted to hug. And I did not want to be hugged by you guys, you know. I quickly learned not to identify as a newcomer because of the break. Watch out, you guys. At the break, people are going to want to hug. And it'll be the best hug you've ever had. So if they come at you, you just reach out for it. You won't believe how fabulous it'll be. But I avoided them for a long period of time. And I spent the whole time staring at my friend sitting next to me, you know. Did you hear that? You know, that was good. Write that down, you know. Don't forget that one, you know. And got her in the car. Okay, now repeat. What did they say? You know, did you get the book? You know, I mean, she never went back and I never left. And this April, that'll be 27 years ago. So grateful. I cannot honestly tell you what made me go back, because I went back by myself. I don't know why, because for a long time I was in such denial that I had a problem. I don't know how. It was at the Reseda Clubhouse. I don't know, you know, funky couches with stuffing coming out of them, you know, yuck. But I heard the most amazing things, not the least of which, and in my opinion, the most important thing in my first meeting was the laughter, which is what we're hearing tonight. And for the newcomers, we always hear laughter in these rooms. It is not because we don't have the pain. It's not because we don't know what you're feeling or where you've been. It's because we have found a way to get on the other side of it. You know, there's a great line that Al-Anon is where we come to laugh together about what we used to cry about alone. And I love that line. I'm sure they were saying those lines when I first came in. I hated the slow. I hated it all. I was not a good newcomer. You know, Winnie Eddy says, you know, about buying literature. She never wanted to, you know, purchase literature because she didn't want people to think she needed it. You know, I was the same way. You know, I don't need you guys. And I sat at the sliding glass door at the break. I ran out front. After the meeting, I ran. It took me a year to get a sponsor. I don't recommend that, you know. But that's the journey I had to take. And people were really gracious with me. They knew not to touch me. They knew not to, they could tell because, you know, I had that look. Whoa, you know. And they just loved me until I was able to love myself. And they did it from a distance. And I still felt it. And I kept coming back, and I kept coming back, and I kept coming back. And I kept hearing the laughter. And I kept hearing stories of people who had experienced far worse things than I had ever experienced or ever will experience. And I heard their solution to getting on the other side of it. I heard compassion for the alcoholics and drug addicts in their lives. I wanted that. And where I found it is in the steps. I also believe in the traditions and the concepts. People talked about God. That was difficult for me because, you know, parochial school, you know, the God of my understanding was a punishing God, and I didn't think he liked me. So I had trouble turning to a higher power. But I kept hearing, you know, the God of my understanding. I will tell you that in my course of time in this program, the God of my understanding has morphed more than once. I am today, and I will share with you what the God of my understanding is today. This is personal for me only. I let everybody else, you know, if it's a shrub, you know, whatever it is, if it's the gray beard, you know, whatever the God of your understanding is, as long as you have that, as fine by me. Today, the God of my understanding is very different than it was before I came into Al-Anon. The way I phrase it, the God of my understanding does not find me parking spots, doesn't get him to call or call back or call again, doesn't get me jobs, doesn't make the tumor benign. Now, if that is the God of your understanding, that is totally wonderful and fine, and that's okay with me. But that is not how that's not the understanding I had to come to in order to have a God that I was willing to go to every single day of my life, sometimes 20 times a day. It had to be, the understanding had to be a definition of somebody I wanted to go to. Not someone I was, I stopped asking for things that for me, I didn't think he could give me because I didn't want to keep being mad at him for not having gotten those things. You know, I hear people come up to the podium and go, I've met the most wonderful man. And I, you know, and this is with years of program behind me. I'd be in the, sitting in the room going, good for you. You know, where's my man? You know, or, oh, I have the most fabulous job. And where's my job? And I would get angry at God. And I could not continue to work a program. I couldn't find, I say, in AA you get sobriety, in Al-Anon you get serenity. You have to be careful with serenity because it can be shattered with just a thought. It doesn't even take an action. It only takes, in fact, it doesn't take a complete thought. Does it? You don't even have to follow the thought through. You just have to have the nucleus of the thought, or I do, for my serenity to be shattered. So for me today to hang on to that, I have to be very diligent with my program and very connected to my higher power. Because serenity to me, this is how I see it, is a phantom, it's a puff of smoke. It takes a lot of work for me to keep my head and heart wrapped around that serenity. There's another great line, when I accepted reality, I became someone I could depend on. And another great line is, some of your hurts you have cured and the sharpest you've even survived, but what torments of grief you've endured from pain that never arrived. You know, I did that my whole life. I did that my whole life. How many years I wasted worrying about things that had not happened, you know. I think the God of my understanding, as Winnie Eddy, again, to quote her, said, gets a kick out of seeing me enjoy this life he saw fit to give me. And I believe that it is my job and my responsibility to find the joy in this life. It is not for me only, for God to give it to me. I felt a lump several years ago. I lived with a doctor. I didn't tell him. I went right back to where I was before I came here. I can do this by myself. I can handle this on my own. You know, what I've learned in Al-Anon, yes, I still can, but why would I? Out of all of you guys, why would I do life alone, the hard parts of life? And I said to God, I prayed to God, I didn't ask him to have it be okay. I said, whatever the outcome is, whatever they tell me this is, give me whatever it is I need to live with it. And while I'm dealing with it, while I'm living with it, with grace and with dignity from you, help me to continue to be of service to the members of Al-Anon, because they're the ones who I know will be of service to me in this process. And the next morning, I got a phone call from somebody when I was getting in the car to go get the mammogram. And it's not even someone I sponsor. And she said, do you have a minute? And I said, actually, I've got longer than that. I've got a long drive. And we talked for the hour and a half it took me to get. That is exactly what I had asked God for, to help me continue to be of service to the members of Al-Anon. That is exactly what I asked for. It's exactly what I got. When I ask my higher power for things that he in fact can give me, I get them every time. Patience, wisdom, consideration, compassion, kindness, understanding, tolerance. I got my boyfriend. I have a boyfriend now. We've been together 13 and a half years. I have now become the person I hated in the room. I have a fabulous boyfriend. I am madly, madly in love with this man. I am so crazy in love with someone who is equally crazy in love with me today. I don't thank God for him. I thank God for helping me to stay on track to be the kind of person who can accept that kind of love in my life today and to be good to him. He gets crabby sometimes. I shared about this at a meeting not too long ago. He gets a little crabby once in a while, and he was crabby, and I wasn't handling it too well, and I said, I got to get out of the house, and I went out of the house, and I was going to wash my car, and his car was next to my car, and my first thought, I'll be honest, I looked at his car, I thought, I'm going to let the air out of his tires. But what I did instead was I washed his car. And the reason I could do that is because Al-Anon taught me to take contrary action. When my thinking is sick and not kind, another line in our books, the highest form of wisdom is kindness. It's so easy when they're not doing what you want or when they make you angry or when they hurt your feelings, especially. It's so hard to not get angry, to not be mad. But Al-Anon has taught me that that's not the best way to respond. The way to respond is with kindness and love. And you've given me a way, when I don't feel that all the time, you've given me a route to those feelings. And that's what I do. I do what Al-Anon tells me to do to get out from under the anger and be back in the love. In fact, today's the courage to change. We will not always be loved in the way that we want to be loved by the alcoholics in our lives. But if we really pay attention, we will see that we are indeed loved. We will not always get everything we want from just one person. But we now know, as members of Al-Anon, where to go when sometimes they're a little crabby, where to go to get the love that we need. And it is in these rooms when you work those steps. I close. I want to thank you for letting me share with you tonight. You know, I'll be honest, I was nervous because there's so many of you here. I always close in the same way with the same poem, and it's in honor of a longtime member in Al-Anon, and it's about letting go, because it wasn't until I let go and let God that my life got better. And the poem goes like this: just as the child brings his broken toys with tears for me to mend, I took my broken dreams to God because he was my friend. But then instead of leaving him at peace to work alone, I stuck around and tried to help with ways that were my own. And when at last he cried, how can you be so, and when at last I cried, how can you be so slow? He said, my child, what could I do? You never did let go. So what I can tell you is, if you want to stay in the pain, you can. If you want to stay in the sadness and the brokenheartedness and in the hollow and in the darkness, you can. But you don't have to. And my suggestion is, work these 12 steps. Reach out to members of Al-Anon. Be a part of a fellowship. Do what you can for this program, and it will give you, in return, the most wonderful life that you could possibly imagine, even with its ups and downs, its illness, its sickness, its money issues, its foreclosures, its this, its that. That's just life. But if you stick around and do what this program suggests that you do, you will live a life beyond your wildest dreams in a place of joy that you can pass on to others. So thank you so much for letting me do that.